What is going on, everybody? My name is Josh. Welcome to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. We have a lovely episode for you today. It's the international break. There is not a ton of news to talk about, so I invited on my old pal, Nathan Page. We're going to talk about just all things European soccer, probably some international stuff as well. Nathan is a brand influencer, a European soccer extraordinaire. In the mid-2000s, some called him the Bill Simmons of the 2020s. That hasn't come to fruition, but nevertheless, we're going to talk about a few different things. And the really the only Barcelona news that I would say is significance has to be that they're going to be allowed to have 100% capacity home games, which is massive news considering that there are three home games in a row, Valencia, and then we got Dynamo Kiev, and of course the Clásico. It's going to be nice to have, you know, full capacity. It's going to be nice unless things go poorly and they start booing. That wouldn't be as nice, but assuming things go somewhat well, it's going to be great to have a full crowd. The other bits of news that I would say are important are the Pedri and Ansu Fati deals are looking closer than ever to being wrapped up for contract extensions. Specifically, the Pedri deal looks like it's going to be wrapped up this week with a release clause of, let me make sure I'm reading this correctly. I think that's $1 billion. Yeah, $1 billion release clause till 2026. This would be great news to get to lock him down. And then Ansu Fati shortly after would be even, or I'm not going to compare, would be equally as interesting. That's kind of all I got for quick news bits. International break is almost over. Yay. We can get back to some real football. Of course, World Cup qualifying stuff has been going on. Not a ton of significance. I guess the U.S. is kind of the only really thing I care about right now. So we're going to get into that and a lot more with Nathan Page. So if you're not subscribed to the podcast, be sure to do so. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, and we will chat again soon. All right. Alrighty, everybody. Welcome to the Barça Blaugranas podcast. I am joined by my old pal, Nathan Page. Nathan is a European soccer extraordinaire. Some called him the future Bill Simmons of the 2020s in 2014. That hasn't quite come to fruition, but he is an online male influencer, which sounds bad, but all the products he advertises are loafers. Currently wearing a PSG Messi kit, which you all won't see because this is audio, but I'm staring right at it while he's wearing a Barcelona hat. I'm not sure if this is for ironic purposes or if he just thinks it's cute, but I'm not really sure what's happening here.
And everybody instantly just undownloaded the podcast and stopped listening. You introduced me as a self-proclaimed future Bill Simmons. I don't know who said that. It was probably me. And then as a male influencer who only advertises loafers, and then, yeah, outing my ironic, completely satirical outfit here, just like really just killing me right off the bat. It's a tough one to come back from, man. I have an uphill battle ahead.
The good news is it's the international break, so I'm expecting like, you know, one third of the usual audience on this one because there's not really much to talk about. In Barcelona land, it's usually just horrible. The only good news that's happening this week is we're re-signing Ansu Fati and Pedri, apparently. Mm. We're also allowed to have 100% capacity at home matches now so that they can be fully booed by the home crowd when they inevitably lose in the next few matches. In the Clásico and in the Champions League, which is just great for everybody because, you know, a full-throated booing is much more appreciated than kind of the halfway boos that we've been getting at home games so far.
I'm really excited because Pep has been, you know, pleading through the media for Man City fans to really, you know, be present and really give a full-throated cheer for the whole crowd. I can't wait for Koeman to get on and just be like, you guys actually, you know, like if we could just stay home, you don't have to really be here because I'm sure he's like not excited for what that'll bring for him at the next 3-0 defeat of name your middle of the table Spanish side. So it's not going to be great.
If anything, he would come out and, you know, just reiterate how he's the future of the club and how they owe him everything. And it's all going to be good from that point on. Give me your TLDR thoughts of the Saudi takeover of Newcastle United. I found it hilarious because I was tasked by my editor to write a Newcastle United transfer rumor piece yesterday, which I think was how I was made aware because I don't really get on Twitter all that much. And so I didn't really know that this had happened. And then I saw, wait, Newcastle United are interested in a Barcelona player. Something's up here. And then I Googled them and found it out that way. So are you expecting them to come in and just, you know, repurchase I don't know, Phil Foden or something from Manchester City? Like, are you worried with Newcastle United money now?
Were you surprised when it wasn't Braithwaite? Whenever you saw that it was that was not the player they're interested in. It's like, hey, no, they're coming for Fappy. What is this?
I am a Braithwaite supporter, so I'm not worried. I think he's Barcelona's hidden treasure, and I'm not worried about him. I am worried about him going to West Ham or
hidden.
Something. Yes,
he's bottom of the cereal box decoder ring. That one. Yeah, no, I'm intrigued because I think now we finally got the answer to who wins the Erling Haaland race. You know, we've been reading every report of every team in Europe that finishes top four in their league being interested in him. So now we know who's actually going to swoop in and do it last minute. It's Newcastle. Who knew? I'm interested to see. I mean, we can't have enough sovereign wealth in the game. So let's go ahead and bring them all in. If we could just have everybody be purchased by the next oligarch or the last oil fiend to kind of take over and buy a team. Let's just have that happen.
I did find it kind of funny. I think there was a report that Ed Woodward was reportedly pretty mad about the entire situation, which I found hilarious because Manchester United getting on their soapbox about finances and all of that after they just signed Cristiano Ronaldo would be pretty ironic to me. I guess he doesn't want anyone else purchasing past their prime, still in their prime superstars. Which reminds
tough, tough
me,
to be on your tough to be on a moral high horse after the Ronaldo purchase, but you know.
We were going to talk about Ronaldo later, but I want to talk about it now because one of my favorite moments of the last month or so was the morning that it switched. I guess it was afternoon in Europe, but it was the morning here in the States on the East Coast when it switched from City to United. And I was lucky enough to be able to break the news to you over a phone call. You are, of course, a City fan, despite the Messi kit and Barcelona hat. And so, given City's current situation regarding their striking and how poor they are in the box, Cristiano Ronaldo would have been the perfect player for them to place up top after Harry Kane didn't happen. Are you still as disappointed today as you were on that day that your beloved Pep Guardiola-led Manchester City did not get Cristiano Ronaldo?
A couple of things I have to say in there. She just said a lot of information. Number one, we have to clarify that at least the Barcelona hat is Barcelona. Sorry, Barcelona. I know I'm on the podcast. The Barcelona hat is a vintage hat. So it is not like
it's
I just went
cool.
out and got
it's very cool.
It's a vintage. Okay. So that, you know, that's one thing. But yeah, Man City fan, became a fan in like 2010. I was trying to find a team to follow. They just got Carlos Tevez. I was like, this seems like it's right. Then I, you know, realized I'd bought into, you know, this again, going back to the sovereign wealth thing, and here we are. So Ronaldo really would have been like the perfect piece because we are the tapas restaurant that has no really good entrees. I mean, like the best tapas you can buy all over the place. I mean, we love this restaurant. It's one of the best in the world, but there's no steak. There's no entree that's going to absolutely blow your mind. And Ronaldo would have been that. Granted, we all would have been taking that kind of like, you know, with our tongue in our cheek kind of thing, you know, like, what are we doing with Ronaldo on a Manchester City team after his history of being at Manchester United, being a red through and through? It really would have been weird. It really would have been awkward, but I was actually all into it just in terms of fit and need for City. The problem for the last couple of years, given that Aguero was out so much last season, was just needing somebody in front of goal who can knock in all of these beautiful passes from all over. Literally almost every player on the pitch is able to create for somebody else, but not for themselves. So I think having somebody who could kind of be the entree at this tapas restaurant would have been great. Even if we would have had to hold our nose while we sprinkle blue cheese all over it, you know, so it's tough. But ultimately I think that Manchester United is going to remain like the Burger King of the world, where they're living off reputation and kind of filling people up on fatty foods without any real direction of what's next. They still have the resources to market, but what are you really marketing? Even if you have, you know, the veggie burger or whatever, the plant-based burger in Mason Greenwood to carry you the rest of the way, they don't have a plan for how to use that. So I just think that when we're talking about those two teams, it would have been nice to have some overlap and some of the talent there to really create a mega team. But I still feel better about City's chances than United, even with Ronaldo being on the other side of Manchester.
So the Manchester City were the second team that was kind of, actually, I don't even know if they were second. They were right there with PSG for like, where was Messi going to go once the Barcelona stuff happened? City pretty quickly, it became apparent that it was going to be there. But they were still kind of second in line. Would you have been happy to have another tiny little attacking menace with no end in sight on the team? Or would he have just would he have just been more of the same problem of like, oh, great, we have a guy who's 5'9 leading the charge up top?
I mean, the Pep and Messi rumors have just like never stopped. I think that they also were happening even when he was at Bayern. Like there was always just, because of the way he used Messi and seemed to unlock the best parts of his game. And those two were just a match made in heaven for how you create an attack using that style of football. So I think that that was always going to be a rumor. I don't know how even close to true it was. Anytime that Messi's on the table, it's the same way. Like I don't love watching Neymar's game, but if somebody's going to put Neymar, you know, on the table, like I'm not going to say no. But ultimately that doesn't solve the actual problem. Like if you're trying to, I think ultimately, like if someone's like, do you want Harry Kane or Messi? Like I still would rather have Messi, but Kane is a more true solution to the problems that plague City. And Messi though, I mean, if you could use him as a false nine up front in City, I think you're going to be okay.
Really? So you would have taken Messi over Kane?
Short term, I think in like a 2 to 3 year span, it would be really tough not to be pulling for that sort of a move. Let me put it this way. If you could give me Messi over the Grealish move, for instance, another attacking player that they've kind of move all over the front. I know he doesn't fit in that exact same role, but having a player like Messi create instead of Grealish, like I absolutely take that, even if it's a shorter term move.
Wait, okay. So you and I have talked about Captain Cavs quite a bit over text message. What's your frustration with him? Because for me, I still, when I watch him, I'm still obviously very impressed by him. So I guess I don't really understand where this frustration is coming from. Is it because he's taking minutes away from our beloved Raz and Phil Foden?
No, I mean, I think Raz is, I love Raheem Sterling's like game. I think he's also really come alive at City, but there is a lot of like Deshaun Jackson-y type of stuff with him from like, if we're comparing it to like an NFL player where it's just, he can take a like the top off a defense, but you can't really trust him with like an out route or like to catch a slant in the end zone. He's just not going to be that guy, but he can
really,
you know,
the
he'll
target
hit
audience here yards. With a Philadelphia Eagles
I know.
Wide receiver.
It's tough. I know. Well, I mean, hey, he's in the news again, I guess, at the Rams, but I just think like a guy like that who's sort of limited, even though he's so talented, I think like I actually would rather have Grealish in. So my complaints aren't like that huge with Jack. I just think that sometimes you see what Foden does when he comes into the game and how much that those two overlap with how they're used both in the middle and on the left-hand side. And I would rather Foden be in there, who's younger, faster, is in some ways more proven with some of the stuff that he's done at City. I think eventually those two will become interchangeable and become a really important attacking force in the middle and left-hand side of the pitch up front for City. So I think ultimately that's the move and that's where they're going to go. And that's how this team is going to kind of, I think if at the end of the season, we're talking about those two becoming the key to what City's doing, that's how City ends up winning the league, winning the Champions League, things like that, is because those two pairing and being kind of the same thing, but different versions of it all over the front and left-hand side of the pitch is what's going to make City go. So I think that's where I look at it and say, I don't really have a huge problem with Jack Grealish at this point. I just think it's hard when you contextualize like what this team actually needed and spending $100 million dollars, euros, pounds, whatever the number ended up being on him, versus getting somebody like Kane in there. That's really tough. And ultimately, I don't know how much were Tottenham even going to move Kane. Like, was that even their choice? I don't know. But I think that Grealish is amazing. Maybe it's just going to take some time for him to get his place. And I don't know that he filled the greatest need for City.
So if all those pieces do magically somehow work together to bring City the beloved Champions League title that they will appreciate for 5 minutes and then move on, how empty will Pep Guardiola feel after winning that title versus the ones he won at Barcelona?
I mean, can we even measure that? I don't know. It's tough. Like how good does anybody at City feel about any of the things they're doing? It's all a, you know, it's like Amazon purchasing their latest startup that had no chance against them, or Google suing the crap out of a startup who's using technology similar to theirs. You know, do they really feel good when they close down that shop? I don't know. That's sort of how it feels. It's like anytime we beat the Wolves of the world or the Norwich Cities of the world, like, can you really feel good about that? It's a sovereign wealth destroying a locally owned club. It's pretty tough, but ultimately, you know, that's what football is all about. It's unfair. It's not great. It's unrelenting. And, you know, as somebody who grew up an Ole Miss fan and a Knicks fan, you know, I've had a lot of trouble in my day on other sides of the sports spectrum. So I can just enjoy some winning, you know, and get invested in that for now.
So let's talk a little bit about Leo Messi led PSG. One of the most interesting about, like, I think it was over maybe a 7-day stretch, or I guess it was probably 5 or 6, when PSG played City in the Champions League and Messi finally got his goal. City had plenty of chances, just never could capitalize on any of them. And then over the weekend, PSG lost in Ligue 1, did not score a goal. And then City beat Chelsea, kind of establishing themselves as the top dog that weekend in England. And then they followed up with a nice draw at Anfield with Liverpool. What were your thoughts on PSG when City lost to them? Because I think it's a little bit hard, and I think in the moment we both knew this as we were talking about it, it's hard to be all that impressed by them, because then you know that they were capable of what they did, like, literally 4 days later and having a crap result, even with the full team out there. Are you impressed by PSG? Are you scared of them? Or do you think it's just going to be a case of they're just going to have hot and cold days, and as long as you don't catch them on a hot day in a best of one, which isn't going to happen until the final, you should be fine?
I think that they're much better built for an elimination style tournament than they are for a long season like they'll face. I mean, but in their league, they're going to have time to figure that out and figure out rotation, figure out a way to find the right pieces, a way to find motivation. They may not even need to be that motivated to win, you know, a 2-0 game in the middle of March. Like, yeah, they may
just
be
fine.
The problem
is they've kind of played, like, for the most part, they've looked very in their league, and they're up by 6 points already.
Right.
That's fine.
And I think that's pretty much how it's going to be. They're going to have time to figure that out in the league side of things. They're terrifying in a single elimination tournament because City did dominate that match through and through. They looked like the better team. They looked more organized. But seeing those three up front, and you saw glimpses in that game of the three of them working together and figuring it out, and it was absolutely terrifying. If we're going back to the restaurant analogy, they're a restaurant that literally is just amazing desserts, but nothing really else of substance, where everyone's going to want that dessert, but you're going to have times where it makes you sick, like the following weekend. Like, the dessert was so sweet when Messi's knocking one into the corner on an amazing, pass from Mbappe in front of goal. And it's just like, that's what you want out of those front three.
Very akin
it's really figuring
to the,
out.
To Dave Chang's milk bar with the cake balls that I had when I was
exactly.
in New York City with you. You know, you're down in the cake balls, and before you know it, you've consumed who knows how much sugar, and you feel a little sick to your stomach.
Exactly. They are a milk bar, and it's incredible. And the truffles are so good. Those cake balls are so good. But what does that leave you an hour and a half from now? And so in that match, you saw, like, if they can get organized in midfield and get production out of that, which they have the talent to do that, God knows they do. And if the back four can just keep it together, they can really make this work and be something special. I mean, and the men that they have playing in the goal for them, like Donnarumma and Navas, like, between those two, they're going to be fine. So it's just kind of, if they can put this together, that dessert is going to take them a long way. I think they have time to do that in the league. And that's the one team that, after watching this season so far, them and Chelsea stand above the rest as a team I don't want to face in a single elimination game, just because I think between the talent and the coaching of both of those teams, like, they're going to figure it out. And ultimately, if you let Neymar and Messi and Mbappe stay close in a game, they're going to make you pay for that more times than not. Again, especially in a single elimination game, when you're not looking at, we've got 10 more, you know, games left in the season, we can let this one slip, we can take away one point here. I think that there's a chance that you could see that happen. But in a Champions League match where everything is on the table right now that you would think that those guys will come through.
Yeah, I can already see the Manchester City PSG semifinal coming down to penalty kicks, and you have Mr. Italian Stallion Donnarumma in the goal, and poor little Gabriel Jesus, who came on it in the 75th minute, steps up for his penalty kick and just gets smothered, and then I have to watch PSG and Chelsea in the Champions League final, which
yeah,
but. Let's talk about World Cup qualifying. So I don't really pay that close of attention. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a very fair weather United States men's national team fan. I'll watch the Gold Cup semifinals and finals. I'll pay attention to what's happening in World Cup qualifying. And right now what's happening is they look like crap. Let me pull up the recent match. I think they lost.
Panama.
It was Panama?
I believe so.
You're right. They play Costa Rica today at 7 p.m. It's a big deal because Costa Rica is 2 points behind them. But right now, the standings in the I can't remember what Men in Blazers used to call CONCACAF, but the World Cup qualifiers is Mexico's in first, 3 points above the U.S. The U.S. is tied with Panama in second and third place with 8 points. And then 1 point back is Canada and 2 points back is Costa Rica in fifth place. The top three, I believe, in CONCACAF automatically qualify. And then the fourth team goes to a playoff. The good news for Team USA is that there are still plenty of matches for them to figure this out. They still have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They still have 9 matches in the World Cup qualifiers to figure things out. The bad news is they still have 9 matches in the World Cup qualifiers to finish worse than they stand right now. And there's the potential for another disastrous result, considering how close they are to the middle of the pack. We could be happy with the fact that they took care of business against Jamaica, although it wasn't easy. Same thing with Honduras. I personally don't feel good about this, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on this other than it's going to suck if they don't make it, and that's kind of it.
Well, yeah, it's really hard because it's very apparent to everybody that the United States team is on its way to, well, right now we have the most talent that we've had in terms of proving it on a global stage at clubs that matter. Like, it's very clear that there is talent there, but the problem is they're all very young and they're showing flashes of this talent, but maybe not enough to be proven talent that anybody would want in their first team on a global stage. Cause if you, I forget what podcast I was listening to, but they did the exercise of like, who in the first team 11 for United States would even be in the top 20, in the whole squad for a Portugal side? You know, like if you play that game, you start to realize that even though United States has the most talent they've had maybe ever in terms of future talent and in terms of players who are proving it on a global stage at clubs that matter, they're still so far behind these other global superpowers. And the team that succeeded for the United States, over 10 years ago or about 10 years ago, that team was full of veterans who had proven it, maybe not at the same level, at the same ceiling that these players look like they can. But a lot of these guys are like 18, 19, 20, 21, 23 years old. And so there's still a long way to go. I think we're one World Cup cycle away from seeing this talent actually prove it, and I think we're one Greg Berhalter away from proving it as well. So not that he's been the major problem, I just think that there's so much hype, people are so hungry for this, and we've seen these players show flashes of talent, and it's obvious why. Like, you go down the list and you can see, like, this guy's doing it at Dortmund, this guy's doing it, you know, it's just, you see that the talent there is obvious. But I just think we're a World Cup cycle away from that mattering. And unless you have a coach that elevates all of that, you're going to get results like we've gotten so far, which is disappointing. I don't think it's end of the world stuff though.
So let's just go through some of the ages of the Team USA guys. So Pulisic right now is 23. In 5 years, like you talked about World Cup cycles, 2026, which is the most near and dear to our hearts because we might actually be able to attend some of those matches while they are held in North America, already being in the U.S. Dest, Barcelona's lovely player, 20 years old, so he'll be 25. McKinney is, how old is he? He's 23, so he'll be the same age as Pulisic. Yeah, he'll be 28. And then I still have hope for DeAndre Yedlin. He'll be 33, so he won't be on the team anymore by then. Okay, I don't have anything else to talk about. I just want to get your thoughts. So, final four of the Champions League. Let's just go ahead and throw PSG in there. Let's go. I don't know what the next three look like. I don't see three English teams making it to the semifinals. So, if you have to pick two English teams out of, I'm assuming, United in there, between Liverpool, Chelsea, and City, who are the two teams who you right now see making it to the semifinals of the Champions League?
I think City and Chelsea for me are the no-brainers. Liverpool, it shows moments of looking as good as those two, but I think like what we have, the League of, what is it called? The African Cup, that League of Nations? Nations Cup?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not, but I mean, two of their most important players are going to, Mane and Salah are going to be at that. So, I mean, I think if those two are going to miss any time, I don't know for sure, I guess, if they're going to, but if they are, they're going to miss a significant amount of time for that, for Liverpool, in a really tight race in the league. What if the additional football creates problems for them, creates chemistry issues? I think what we could see is that Liverpool falls away, both in the league and in Champions League, or falls aside for that. I think so. Anyways, I think Chelsea and Manchester City, just by kind of elimination of Liverpool, not as much of talent separation, are the two that make it to the final there. I think that City have a lot of, I think Chelsea are in full form at this point. I think what they are could beat anybody in the world right now. I think City could grow into the level that PSG and Chelsea are at right now, which I do think is a 1A, 1B difference between them and City. So I think City does have another level to go here. And I think those will be the three that make it. And then you could see some combination of Bayern, Real Madrid, making it into that other spot.
Cool. All right. Well, Nathan, thank you for joining us. International break special. I'm going to spare the audience from any college football talk. We'll save that for another time. And appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely, man. Happy to do it. Thanks for having me.